The first day of the Republican convention began with fratricide and ended with plagiarism. In between, speakers painted a dark picture of an America under attack from forces within and without. Turkey, a country where such forces are very real, continues to purge the military and police after an attempted coup. And after last week's court ruling in favor of the Philippines, the world waits for the other shoe to drop in the South China Sea. Those are just some of the stories on the minds of news analyst Neil Conan, who returns today, as he does most Tuesdays, not quite back on his mat at farm, but closer, at least in Los Angeles today. So welcome, almost home.
Thanks very much, Beth Ann. I get back to the Big Island tomorrow.
Okay, that's good news. Now, before we get to the controversy over Melania Trump's speech, I got to ask you about the overall tenor of the convention in Cleveland. I mean, there was pretty light on ideology, nothing really of policy, but very heavy on emotion. Rudy Giuliani was whipping him up just into a frenzy, and there were those dark and scary pictures painted of America. What's the real message here?
I think what we're seeing is sort of an extreme form of two very familiar American political campaigns, one of which is throw the bums out. Those other guys have been in power too long. They're taking us down the road to perdition. It's time for a change. The other is we're not them. Whatever you think of us, those other guys are much worse. To be fair, I think we'll hear a fair bit of that next week in Philadelphia, too, that whatever we do can't possibly put Trump in power. And that's interesting. That first argument has a very strong basis in history. No political party has managed to hold on to the White House after a two-term presidency since World War II, except once, and that was when George H.W. Bush followed Ronald Reagan. And, of course, Bush was a one-term president.
Okay, so when you bring up Ronald Reagan, though, there are calls to mind of his rather sunny outlook, quite optimistic. Remember, it's morning in America. Our best days are ahead of us. That's a long way, though, from the dystopia that speakers described yesterday in Cleveland.
That's true. But that darker view, I think, jibes very well with the anger and frustration of so many voters in the Republican base, the people who chose Donald Trump. What we don't know is whether that can expand to include a lot of independents and even some Democrats, not to mention the sizable fraction of Republicans who say, at least right now, that they can't bring themselves to vote for a candidate who said so many, ugly things about minorities and women.
That one inclusive speech last night, the one speaker who did reach out was the candidate's wife. But practically before the applause faded, her message was just so overwhelmed when it became clear that, parts of those speech had been lifted almost verbatim, from the speech that Michelle Obama delivered as a candidate's wife 8 years ago.
And, it's going to be a major distraction today and maybe all week. Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort told CNN, it just didn't happen. It's absurd to think that they would crib from Michelle Obama. And certainly he said there's no feeling on her part, Melania, that she did it. And I guess that's not quite a denial. My favorite, though, was Chris Christie, who said 93% of her speech was completely different from Michelle's. I don't know where he got that number. It might even be right. But then again, the parts of her speech that were identical were the sections on honesty, character, and integrity. This is a long way from being explained away, and we have yet to see how Mr. Trump is going to respond to what he may see as the humiliation of his wife.
Which is going to go on and on, especially as they're playing those speeches next to each other and then on top of each other. Anyway, we're going to stay tuned for all that. I want to ask you, though, about a couple of the international stories, including that extraordinary drama that started to play out last Friday in Turkey, where at least some parts of the military tried to overthrow the government. Hundreds of people were killed and injured, and now thousands have been arrested.
Turkey has a long history of military takeovers. President Erdogan and his AK party, it's an Islamist party, not an extreme Islamist party, but they have long suspected the soldiers wanted to throw them out, and he worked very hard to remove those he suspected of disloyalty, to the point where he was accused of, paranoia. Now, I don't mean to dismiss the casualties and the many thousands who will lose their jobs over this. Of course, many will be in prison, too. But now Erdogan gets the gift of having been right all along in the form of a coup so ineptly staged that some people think he might have done it himself.
Now, there's been a lot of talk of that, but is there really any evidence?
No. Then again, there's no evidence of the involvement of the exiled cleric who Erdogan is blaming either. That's a man named Gulen who lives in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. Erdogan blames him for, you know, pulling the strings and demands the United States extradite him to Turkey.
What did these plotters do wrong, though?
Just about everything. They didn't have anything like unanimous support in the military. They did not have a plan to make it look as if they did have broad-based support. And then they violated the very first rule of coup d'etats, which was laid out by Machiavelli all those years ago. And that's if you strike at the prince, don't miss. That's actually a paraphrase of Machiavelli from Ralph Waldo Emerson, of all people. But they, the coup plotters did not arrest Erdogan. They did not kill him. He went on social media to call his supporters into the streets. And shortly after that, the coup collapsed.
Now, I can't let you go without asking you about the South China Sea. We talked about that the last time. But since then, an international court has handed a sweeping victory to the Philippines and thrown out China's claim to the entire area. So what happens next?
Well, as we talked about, China refused to participate in those proceedings. Beijing argues the court has no jurisdiction and it will not abide by the ruling. And nobody is going to be trying to push China off its artificial islands in the Spratlys in the South China Sea or push away Chinese fishing boats or the Chinese Navy. Nobody wants a war here. But this is very important. It bolsters the court decision bolsters the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, and recently Indonesia has gotten drawn into this. All countries who see the Chinese as bullies trying to expand their territory. It's a major loss for China, where every school child is taught that these waters and these islands belong to China since the Ming Dynasty. The situation is really very unstable right now. It would be easy to see somebody acting to assert what they see as their rights. In fact, I think it's only a matter of time before somebody does something provocative. Who and what and when and where will all be important, and it's worth noting that the professional heads of the United States and Chinese navies are meeting in China this week with the South China Sea at the top of the agenda.
All right, for the moment, we're going to leave it there, but you're going to be home next week?
Hey, those Mac nuts don't pick themselves.
You could ask for some help, and I bet you'd get it from a lot of people. Have a good trip back and
okay,
a safe one.
Beth Ann.
We'll check in next week. News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from his MacNut farm. You can also hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.